Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, yes, welcome back, my friends, once again to another episode of Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 42 for April the 15th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I will guide you through this magical nightmare of things called networks, servers, switches, and everything glory with the fiber works. My friends, I want you to check out the website if you get a chance, and that is at tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows. You can leave me voice messages at 724-701-0550. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, I would love to hear it. And that's where tonight's show comes from, and we'll get to that in just a few minutes. But you can email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, and as at Technoman. I would really appreciate you doing so. And you know what? Get those questions in. Send me your questions to jackstechcorner@gmail.com. I love getting questions, and as I said in the past, it does help the shows move along a little bit because we get a lot of feedback between me, the person talking to you, and you, the person listening in your car. And I know at times you're listening because I listen to a lot of podcasts in my car. And there's a lot of times I'll get to work and I'll think, what was that question? I knew I wanted to ask something. So then I go back and I come back in and I listen to a little part of it at work, maybe the episode or the segment that I want. And then I actually write the question down and try to put that together. And I'll call it into the actual podcaster. So if you do that, and that would be fantastic. Now, I didn't want to get into this. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, if this is a true administrative type networking show that we're talking to you about administering your network and your servers and stuff, we kind of have to talk about this threat that's going around right now, and we're going to try to put it into a little perspective. I am not the leading expert on this threat by any means, so don't think that's the case. But what we're talking about here is this Heartbleed. I don't even know if it's called a virus. I think it's a Heartbleed vulnerability with OpenSSL, because I'm sure by now you've heard about this. But if you hadn't, sit down, or you know, if you're driving, be careful, keep watching the road and listen. And I'm going to try to put this into perspective for you, what it is and what you should do. And that's about all we're going to talk about it, and we're going to move on. Because you may not be running any secure HTTPS services on your server, so maybe this doesn't affect you. But overall, security-wise, I think I got to talk to you about this because somebody at your office or your job may come up to you and say, hey, network administrator, do you know anything about this Heartbleed? I want you to be informed. That's what these shows are about. So I want you to understand a little bit about it. So you can say, well, yeah, I do, and let me put this to rest for you. So we're going to read through this article I found on it. Because again, I'm not one of the leading world experts on it, so I kind of consulted some experts on the internet and found some information that I wanted to share with you. So how it works. This problem affects a piece of software called OpenSSL. It's used for security on popular web servers. With OpenSSL, websites can provide encrypted information to visitors, such as data transferred, including usernames, passwords, and cookies. And it cannot be seen by others while it goes from one computer to the other. And that's why in the past, and if you're not familiar with it, you'll see the little padlock on most web browsers when you visit a site, an HTTPS site. That S site has always been secure, and that's what we've always known it to be, is secure. And we always kind of took it for granted. It's secured by an open source project, and the open source project is called OpenSSL, and that's a secure socket layer, SSL. That's exactly what that means. Now, it's an open source project, meaning it was developed by really talented volunteers, free of charge, to help the internet community. A lot of stuff that has been on the internet for years, and a lot of stuff that we use on the internet has been created by someone to kind of help out. And this is huge because, you know, just think of how many people out there don't patch and update their computers. And then when a computer gets taken over, what happens at that point is it starts to infect other computers and other computers and other computers, and it rolls out of proportion. So if somebody in the community out there says, hey, wait, I'm a really good programmer, I kind of know this stuff about networks, and they can design something for free and push it out to help them, it's going to also help everybody else. But a mistake introduced by the programmer, and it allows, it happens that version 1.0.1 of OpenSSL, it has been released on April 19th, 2012. Now, this little bug has been out there for a long time. So why is everybody now going, holy hell, what should we do with this? I mean, you know, yeah, I think anytime something is released into the open, the news or whatever, the media gets a hold of it, it creates a mass panic. Everybody wanting to change their passwords and everything. Folks, this happened in 2012. If it's been compromised at server, your stuff has been gone for a long time. So think about that now. So that should help put it a little bit to rest for you and give you a little bit of an at ease feeling. But the person that allows for a person, including a malicious hacker, to retrieve information on the memory of the web server without leaving a trace. Now, folks, I've administered, and I've set up a ton of web servers. The most that they're going to get off of our web servers is the HTML pages. Okay, they may steal some of my Java code that I wrote or some of my PHP coding, but hey, you know, be that what it is, and they can take those files. Now, this honest mistake was introduced with a new feature implemented by Dr. Robin Siegelman. It's S-E-G-G-E-L-M-A-N-N. He's a German programmer who often contributes security code. Now, the Heartbleed exploits a built-in feature of OpenSSL called Heartbeat. When the computer accesses a website, the website will respond back to let the computer know that it's active and listening to its requests. This is the Heartbeat. This is called, or this call and response is done by exchanging data. Normally, when your computer makes a request, the Heartbeat will only send back the amount of data your computer sent. So it's an even one-to-one exchange. However, this is not the case with servers currently affected by the bug. The hacker is able to request to the server, and the data is actually memory beyond the total data of the initial request, up to 65,536. Now, the actual data that lives beyond the request may contain data left behind by other parts of OpenSSL, according to Cloudflare. What's stored in the extra memory space is completely dependent on the platform. As more computers access the server, the memory at the top is recycled. This means that previous requests may still reside in the memory and block the hacker request back from the server. Just what might be those bits of data, such as login credentials, cookies, and other data, may be exploited by the hackers. So at this point, what should you do? Because this feature is so specific, the number of servers actually affected is significantly fewer than many thought originally. In fact, while some estimates mentioned that 60% of all internet servers had the Heartbleed bug, Netcraft says the number should be much lower, and under 17.5%. While it's still a lot of servers, but still less than 60% what they was normally initially saying it could be. After the discovery of the bug, the OpenSSL software has been rapidly patched. As of now, you should be running version, get this, I don't know why they do this, 1.0.1.g. The problem no longer exists. Even before that, if the OpenSSL software was installed without the Heartbeat extension, the server never would have been vulnerable to begin with. So, And I've been listening to a lot of podcasts online too, folks, because I'm just like you listening to this one. I also listen to podcasts, and, you know, that's why I set these shows up, because I couldn't find a show much like this. Years ago, there was a show, it was called Casting from the Server Room. It was a wonderful group of guys, technologists that worked in schools up around Philadelphia in that area. And since I'm a school technologist, I thought that I would take it over and run Tips from the Server Room. And, you know, what's nice about this is they gave us a daily breakdown of all this stuff and all these different types of vulnerabilities and things that happen. But the thing about where I'm going at here is the media causes mass hysteria. The media has everybody out there, change your passwords right away. Here's the honest to God truth. If you change your password today, and if this server that you happen to be changing your password on is vulnerable with this Heartbleed bug, not really a virus, it's a bug, then what's going to happen there is, honestly, your new information might be residing in that top part of that memory. So when somebody downloads it or sucks that memory down, they're going to have your new password. You'd probably be better off just to leave it as your old password. This has been going on since 2012. If somebody had your information by now, you would already know it. So I don't think this is something where we have to rush out and change your password. I really think you'll be fine. I know myself, for one, I have not been out and changing my passwords, and I don't get hysterical over this stuff. I've been doing this for way, way too long to worry about this. But anyway, we're going to go into tonight's part of tonight's show, the topic that I was actually working on for this episode after I got home from work today. And this actually comes from an email question I had about my online classes. And what they asked about my online classes was, does it include migration? And I didn't do a migration set of videos. And the reason I didn't do that is because I think I have it here in writing. I'm actually going to talk you through it tonight. But the reason I didn't do it is because I never really know when I create a video. If I go from 2003 to 2012, how do I know if you're not going from 2008 to 2012? So I didn't really want to create migration videos for those courses, because I think that changes a little bit over time, and I didn't want to lock into any certain time frame with those videos. So as I said, tonight I thought we'd talk about migrating your Windows servers. And the reason we wanted to talk about this, because of the end of support coming for Windows Server 2003, which I just recently read today somewhere. I think it was July 15th, 2014. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's what it was, July 15th or around that time frame. So I thought, you know, we should be ready to upgrade our server farms and start moving on. And you should not be on Server 2003 now. If you have a Server 2003 and you're not running 2008, you probably should listen to this, these steps very closely. Go back and replay it a few times. And what I'll do is I'll look for the link I used to find this information, and I'll post it with tonight's show notes so you can go in there and find it and migrate your servers. I think that's a really important thing to do. Now, is it better to migrate or build a new domain controller and bring it up on a network? Well, we've done that in the past. We've actually created a new domain. We left our old domain. We left it die and go away, and we built a new domain controller. This is when we went from 2003 to 2008. I built a brand new domain. I gave it a new name, and there was an issue there. And the issue is, just like the gentleman that emailed me, he don't want to go out and have to touch all the workstations. And we did. We had to touch 700 workstations, because you got to take them off the old domain, you got to put them back on the new domain, right? That's just the way life is. And you have to re-authenticate those on the new domain and get all that stuff set up. So if you do a migration, the object of the migration is, very simply, if you have xyz dot local.com, let's say, or .local.org, whatever you're going to call it, you want to keep that same domain name, so you're going to migrate that into your new server. So your new server is going to take over the domain role, the domain administrative role, where now they're forest and all these branches and trees and hoopla. To me, folks, I've been doing this for so long, there's always a primary domain controller, and there can be a backup domain controller. So the new primary domain controller will be xyz.local.com or org or whatever, because it's going to take over that role. And then we're going to go back and demote the other primary domain controller, which all of a sudden makes the new big guy the new boss of the network, and he's going to take over. So when you do this, you don't have to touch the workstations, because even though you're changing IP addresses, it's not the IP address really so much that the computer's looking for, right? It's the name. And if you get this set up in your DNS properly, everything's going to work very, very well. And this was a question I actually posed to my my work partner today, and we have a new intern, and I posed this question to them today, and they both got it wrong. So we're going to make sure you get it right. Now, if you decide, as I said, to bring up a new domain controller, remember you got to touch every workstation. We talked about that. And what is the act of migrating? We just went over that. It's taking one domain controller and bringing it up on a new platform, a new Windows version, and you want to migrate everything over. Simply put, migrating allows us to pull all of our settings over, our users, our shares, our policies from one server to another. Once we are done, we will be, as I said, demoting our old server, and this will set the new domain controller to take over our network as the kingpin, as the boss, as our primary domain controller. Tonight's show is going to become very technical very quickly. I've received emails in the past that said, Jack, I love your show, but it gets too technical. Folks, this show is designed for all you systems admins out there, you accidental admins, which I know a lot of you are out there in the office space right now going, Jesus, God, we have 2003 server, and we got to upgrade. I got to listen to this. It's going to get a little techie. Bear with me. Hang in there. We're going to do this slowly, a slow process. And then once you listen to this, I want you to go to my website, tipsfromtheserveroom.com, and I'm going to put this link up there so you can keep it. Bookmark it, save it as a favorite, whatever you choose to do with it. But keep it handy, because then when you go to migrate, you'll say, hey, I know what Jack told me to do, but I don't remember every step, so I'm going to read this actual document that he put up there. And there's actual screenshots in it, too, so it's a wonderful document. All right, we're going to go ahead and get started here. I'm going to take a little sip of coffee. Okay, the first thing we want to talk about here is transferring the flexible single master operations. Already, it's getting techie. That's FSMO role, the flexible single master operations. Now, the first thing you want to do before you do anything else is get your DNS working properly. Make sure you can resolve the names of your domain controller. Make sure you can resolve the names of your new server that you're bringing up online that you're going to transfer everything to. And you do that just by simply, you could do a DNS lookup, you can do a ping, you can do an IP config, whatever you got to do to make sure that DNS server is going to resolve the name to the correct IP address, because if not, it's not going to work. You are going to be ripping your hair out, and you're going to be calling me every name in the book saying, Jack said this would work, and it's not working. You need to get DNS properly working. If you don't know anything about DNS, go to my YouTube videos at 42 Technoman. That's number 4, number 2, Technoman. Search for DNS. I have 2 videos up there. That's going to extremely help you. I get so many compliments on those videos, and it teaches you how to set DNS up properly. You need to watch those if you're not familiar. Then, you're going to need to get the current operating system you want to upgrade to. So if you're going from 2003 to 2008, so be it. That's okay. I think 2008 server is going to have support for quite a long time. If you're going to bring up a new Windows server, 2012 R2, God bless you. I wish you all the luck in the world. No, actually, I do teach it. You see it's on my courses. It works extremely well. There's nothing really wrong with it. Yeah, the interface still has that Metro clunky thing, but hey. Be that what it is, it does work, and you'll be quite fine. And I always say, don't upgrade the old technology. So if you're going to upgrade from 2003 to 2008, think about it a while. You might just want to go from 2003 to 2012. Why not just take the big jump and do it, right? That's why I say, just do it. We're going to be doing some migrations this summer, bringing up some new Windows Server 2012s. So I think you should maybe do the same thing. So we're going to open up Active Directory users and computers on our freshly built Windows Server 2012 R2 computer. We're going to right-click on your domain, and select Operation Masters from the submenu. In the Operations Masters window, ensure that the RID tab is selected. Then select the Change button. Once you do that, select Yes when you're asked to transfer the Operations Master role. Once the Operations Master role has successfully transferred, click OK to continue. Ensure that the Operations Master box now shows your new 2012 R2 Windows server. Repeat steps 4 to 6 for the PDC and infrastructure tabs. Remember PDC, I told you it will always be a primary domain controller to me, and they still have it signified as the same in the Windows 2012 boxes. Once completed, click Close to close the Operation Masters window. Close the Active Directory Users and Computers window. Now we're going to move on. Again, if you don't get this, just bear with me and kind of listen. I'm walking you through this. If you want to put a pair of headphones on and listen when you're migrating, that's probably a great way to use this podcast tonight, because then you can listen to me and you can see it as you're clicking around on your server. Now, changing the Active Directory domain controller. Open the Active Directory domain and Trust Console on your new Windows Server 2012 R2. Right-click on the domain and select Change Active Directory Domain Controller in the submenu. In the Change Directory Server window, select This Domain Controller or ADLDS Instance. Then select your new 2012 R2 Windows Server. Click OK to continue. Back in the Active Directory Domains and Trust window, hover over the Active Directory Domains and Trust found in the folder tree on the left-hand side to ensure that the server now reflects your new 2012 R2 Windows Server. Right-click Active Directory Domains and Trusts found in the folder tree and select Operations Manager in the submenu. In the Operations Manager's window, click Change to transfer the domain naming master role to the 2012 R2 Windows Server. When asked if you're sure you wish to transfer the Operations Master's role to a different computer, click Yes. Once the Operations Master is successfully transferred, click OK to continue. Click Close to close the Operations Master's window. Then close the Active Directory Domains and Trust Console. Now we're moving along, and I know this seems like it's a little fast. I'm talking as slow as possible without putting you to sleep in the car driving or wherever you may be. I don't want you to fall over. But yet we have to go through this at an even pace. And again, make sure you're just following these steps. These steps are very clear-cut and very straightforward and easy to do. We're going to change the scheme of the master now. We're going to open a command prompt in administrative view. If you've never done this, you want to right-click on Run and click on Run as Administrator because it gives you more rights on that server. Now, you're going to do this on your new Windows Server 2012 R2 computer. At the command prompt window, you're going to enter regserve. If you've never typed that, it's regsvr32 space schmmgmt.dll, and you're going to hit enter. Once completed successfully, click OK to close the regserve32 window. And if you've ever registered DLLs, I'm sure you've seen this before. It's very simplistic to register a DLL. Now we're going to add the Active Directory Scheme console from MMC. Open the MMC console of your new Windows Server 2012 R2. Click File, Add and Remove Snap-in. In the Add and Remove Snap-in window, select Active Directory Scheme and click the Add button. Now we're going to change the scheme to Master. In the same MMC console, right-click on Active Directory Scheme and select Change Active Directory Domain Controller in the submenu. In the Change Directory Server window, select This Domain Controller or ADLDS Instance. Select your new 2012 R2 Windows Server. Click OK to continue. Now, a warning is going to appear stating that the Active Directory Scheme Snap-in is not connected. Click OK to continue. Hover over the Active Directory Scheme folder in the folder tree to ensure that the Windows Server computer is shown. Right-click Active Directory Scheme and select Operations Master in the submenu. In the Change Scheme Master window, click Change to transfer the Scheme Master role to the 2012 R2 Windows Server. Once the Scheme Master is successfully transferred, click OK to continue. Click Close to close the Change Scheme Master. In the MMC, click File, Exit. When asked to save the console, click No. Once completed, open the Active Directory Users and Computers console to verify that the Active Directory database successfully replicated to the new Windows Server 2012 R2 computer. Be aware that the database replication may take some time depending on the number of objects in your Active Directory. So remember this stuff, folks. If you have a very large Active Directory, and I know we do, we have, right now our Active Directory accounts are probably right around 2,000, I guess, AD accounts, and we have tons of different subgroups set up, tons of different OUs or object units in there, and we did that so we can, you know, kind of set your day. I hate to see a flat Active Directory. Did you ever see one of those where you go and you click on the users tab and there's 2,000 users in there? You don't know who they belong to. You don't know where they're at. You don't even know what department they work in. They're all just in there. That is somebody that didn't have an overall plan, and we have to have an exit plan in a school. Every one of our students are put into our Active Directory, and each Active Directory OU subfolder is actually created with their year of graduation. So I know when my seniors graduate, I can grab that folder and I can delete it, and all those students are gone. And if we're looking for a student, all we have to know is their year of graduation, and we can find them pretty rapidly. But when we transfer those from one AD to a new server, it's going to take a while to migrate. That stuff's going to take a while to get that over there and get that migration flowing in the proper direction to get all that stuff set up properly. So give it some time, relax, go have a cup of coffee, maybe go to lunch or do something and let it go. Now we're going to remove the 2003 Windows Server from our global catalog server. Now, open Active Directory Sites and Services on the new Windows Server 2012 R2 server. Expand the Sites folder. Then, the default First Site Name folder, select the Servers folder. Expand both listed servers. One should be your new server, and one now should be your Windows 2003, your old server. Right-click on NTDS settings found under your old server. Under the submenu, select Properties, and under the General tab, unselect Global Catalog, and then click Apply. Click OK. Close the Active Directory Sites and Services window, and verify that your new Windows Server, your 2012 R2 Windows Server, is running the FSMO rule by opening a command prompt in Administrator View and running the following command. NETDOM space query QUERY space FSMO. In the Network and Sharing Center, be sure to change the preferred DNS server to match the alternative DNS server. Then delete the IP address listed under the alternate DNS server should it currently be pointing to the old 2003 server. So remember, I said before, make sure your DNS servers are set up. Make sure you have a DNS server set up on this new Windows Server 2012 box, because the old 2003 DNS server is going away. We're not going to have that anymore. So we're now going to be relying on this new DNS server. If you have more in your network, don't worry about it. That's okay for now. Or if you have one on your network and you want to point this back to that one, that's okay too, if that's how you're running your network, and that's fine. As long as we have a operational DNS server. I would truly recommend having this accomplished through the years. I would truly recommend that you do put a DNS, the services on your new server and let it point to itself. It's much quicker and it works a lot better. Once all this is done, all that's left to do is to demote our old Windows 2003 server. We shake its hand, we pat it on its floppy drive, on its head, and we say, hey, thanks for all the years of faithful service you've given us. We are now going to go in and do a DC promo, and we're going to demote it and take it and tell it it's no longer our domain controller. It's going to feel bad, and you may feel a little sad because it's ran so well for all these years, but you're going to have that fresh new Windows 2012 R2 server. It's going to be your primary DNS, and it's going to be your primary domain controller, and you're going to feel a lot better and sleep a lot easier at night knowing you don't have to wait for this the end of life thing to come like everybody did with the XP. Like, oh, is today that date? And everybody's like running to upgrade their computers, and we knew it's been coming for quite a while. So you know it's coming. I told you, I think it's July something I read online the other day, July something, 15th or 16th, that Server 2003 is supposed to be losing its support also. So, folks, I want to thank you so much for joining me here each and every week. I want to thank you for downloading these shows and subscribing to my iTunes, the iTunes store on the iTunes for the podcast. I would wish, and we had a couple of you go in there and actually write a little comment. So if you go to iTunes, if you get a chance, go in there and comment on the show. It helps to move it up in the rankings a little bit and helps other people to find it and more of us to get together. I believe if you're a network administrator, I just had one call me the other day and we talked about their firewall and how to make some changes on it to make their throughput a little bit better. And I believe in network administration, you have to pay it forward. Folks, I don't want your job. And chances are you probably don't want my job. But we both do the same kind of job. And I believe in paying it forward. So if you have a question, email it in. Because if I put it out there, folks, we have thousands of listeners to this show, and people will pick it up and they'll run with it. Somebody will have an answer for you. Even if I don't, we will find somebody to take care of your issue. And that's just a perfect solution to pay it forward. I also ask that you pay it forward. I ask that you give your time to somebody else. If another network administrator, I don't care if you work for, JCPenney Corporation, and somebody from Sears calls and says, hey, we're having trouble with our firewall. We don't know what to do. Help the guy out. Pay it forward. Share your knowledge. You have a great brain. You have a great amount of knowledge. Share that knowledge around. So I want to thank you so much for coming here and downloading these shows. I also want to thank everybody out there who's been signing up for my Windows Server courses. You are the people that's making these possible, these shows. You're the reason that drives me to put these shows together. Tonight's whole topic came from somebody talking to me about the Windows Server courses, and that is where tonight's show came from. So you drive these shows, and your continued support allows me to create these shows and allows me to take time to sit down and write the show notes that I need to have for these. Also remember, if you don't have high-speed internet, you're not out of luck. You can actually go to jackstechcorner.com, click the pull-down menu, and the Windows Server DVDs are in there. Now, these are great DVDs with high resolution, high definition videos in there. You get the DVD at home. I mail it to you the next day shipping. Next day delivery. I ship the next day after you order, and you'll get this thing, and you can watch these videos in the comfort of your on your computer, the comfort of your own time. You don't have to use your internet speed to do so. Now, somebody did email me once and said, Jack, what's the difference between the DVD and the online course? The only difference is the DVD is just the videos. The online course has quizzes, the little quizzes that go along with each video that you watch. And at the end, I do mail you a certificate in the mail. And a lot of people are using these to get jobs with. A lot of people are using these to hang on their wall just to feel good that they are continuing their education. Now, if you want to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2, or I shouldn't even say that. If you want to learn everything about it, you don't know a thing about Windows Server 2008 or Windows Server 2012, or VMware EXXi, or you do, you're in a systems administrator, these courses are for you. I wrote these courses, I designed these courses, I put hours and hours into the video content to make these courses available for you, and this is from A to Z. This is install to administration. And the prices are so low that I've actually had people email me and said, is the price right? They said, should it be $2,000? It's only $200. And I said, yes, it's $200. And they said, why? They must not be any good. And I said, look, I want to pay it forward. I do have to, you know, make a little bit of money from it. And that's just the way life is, a little bit of administrative cost there to run everything. But on the back end, I do work at this job full time. So I have a full time job. I don't have to charge. Some of these websites are charging $2,000, $3,000, up to $5,000 for this material. That's because they don't have full time jobs. They're making their money off the internet. I wish I could do so, but I'm doing fine the way I'm doing it. So I just want to pay it forward. So sign up for these courses, folks, at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Look at the top of the page. There's an online class link. Click on that. And again, the videos are self-paced. You watch a video, you take a quiz. Once you are signed up for the course, you're in it for life. I never get rid of you. There's no time expansions. There's no ending and no starting times. You sign up tonight, you start tonight. And if you finish in a month, you finish. I've had some people taking this course now for 3 or 4 months. They're just taking their time. People come back all the time and watch the videos to maybe bone up on something, and that's okay. Again, once you complete the course, I will mail you a certificate. So you can sign up at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. And I'm sorry that I do advertise these, but I do put it at the end. So you could have stopped by now and said, I don't want to listen to the guy anymore. Thanks. I'm out of here. But I know a lot of you do, and I really do appreciate that. Again, get those email questions in, please, jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And I'm asking you because I know you have a question out there. I know there's something in that mind of yours that says, I got a question and I just don't know how to answer it. If you word it the best you can fill in some of the blanks and maybe make it even better for you. And if you don't want me to give you, I usually just give a first name so nobody knows you. I'll just call you Frank or Joe or whatever. So, folks, I hope you can have a great work week this week, and I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful server. I hope everything is running well for you on your end. I know this year we're looking at upgrading some fiber stuff, and I'll talk about that in a future show. We got to get off this 1 gig kick. I think we got to get some 5 and 10 gig fiber running, and we'll talk about how I plan on doing that and see if that's possible. We're also going to be talking in the future here about VLANs because I've been working a lot of VLANs, and we're going to try to put that into some perspective. If you know of anything, I want to give you one more note, and you want to be on the show and talk to me, let me know ahead of time. Email me, and what we'll do is we'll set up a Skype conversation, and we'll chat during the show. We can talk. Maybe if you can even be a co-host and bounce ideas. I'm still looking for people that know Mac OS X server very well, and I'm still looking for people that know Linux servers and Linux boxes to help me out and maybe co-host a show one night so we can talk about that and get more people interested in Linux and help with the Mac servers, and we'll figure that stuff out. Thank you so much. Take care, everybody, and I will talk to you next Tuesday night here on Tips from the Server Room. Bye for now. Take care. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.